Okay. Welcome back to Literally Can't Even. We didn't do a 6 month long hiatus this time, so very exciting.
No. And this may be our fastest turnaround ever. Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah, we did pretty good. This book was pretty, I mean, I don't know. I guess we tend to read books that are around 400 to 500 pages usually.
Yeah.
So I guess it was similar, but it felt long, but I read it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the pages are huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the pages are really big. The text is pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
I think if this was sized a different way, it would easily be at least 450.
Yeah.
Easily. But yes, this time we read The Atlas Six by Olivia Blake. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say her name?
Yeah, I think I would guess Olivia, but it's not her real name. It's like a pen name.
Right.
But now she's releasing books under another name as well.
Yeah, she's releasing YA under her real name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, her real name is Alexine Farrell Falmouth. So.
Yeah. And she actually has a new book coming out this month.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah,
a YA called My Mechanical Romance.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll... I don't know if I'll pick it up. I definitely want to read the sequel.
Yes.
The Atlas Six,
though. As soon as I finished, I immediately went to go see, like, whether there was a sequel, when it was coming out, and it comes out in October. So, unfortunately, we have to wait.
Right. But I think we will definitely be doing it for the podcast.
Yeah.
Because we both are genuinely excited about a release, and how often does that happen?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I'm just really quickly going to read the little blurb, and then we will get into it. So,
yes.
The Atlas Six. The Alexandrian Society is a secret society of magical academics, the best in the world. Their members are caretakers of lost knowledge from the greatest civilizations of antiquity, and those who earn a place among their number will secure a life of wealth, power, and prestige beyond their wildest dreams. Each decade, the world's six most uniquely talented magicians are selected for initiation, and here are the chosen few. Libby Rhodes and Nicholas Ferrer de Verona, inseparable enemies, cosmologists who can control matter with their minds, Raina Mori, a naturalist who can speak the language of life itself, Parisa Kamali, a mind reader whose powers of seduction are unmatched, Tristan Kane, the son of a crime kingpin who can see the secrets of the universe, and Callum Nova, an insanely rich pretty boy who could bring about the end of the world. He need only ask. When the candidates are recruited by the mysterious Atlas Blakely, they are told they must spend 1 year together to qualify for initiation. During this time, they will be permitted to access the society's archives and judge on their contributions to arcane areas of knowledge. Five, they are told, will be initiated. One will be eliminated. If they can prove themselves to be the best, they will survive, most of them. I don't think I even read the blurb before I started reading this. I totally saw the cover and I was like, sold.
Yeah. Well, what happened is Lily bought this when she bought A Touch of Ruin.
Mm-hmm. Because it was on sale.
I was like, oh, I wanted to read that too.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea what it was about, but I knew it was like self-published and then picked up by a publisher, which mm-hmm. means, you know, it has to have some sort of quality, right?
Right. Well, but the same yeah, thing I had helped no with, idea. The same thing happened with A Touch of Darkness, so.
Yeah.
There is that.
Yeah.
But well, this one
thanks
did.
Book talk, honestly. But whenever I went into this book, I just knew it was about dark academia. I had no idea there was actually, like, magic involved. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge surprise.
Yeah.
So, star rating, what would you give this?
Honestly, I kind of want to give it a 5. I really liked it.
Okay.
And I feel like now, you know, there were definitely some, like, elements that I was kind of like, about. But, like, I had a lot of fun reading it. I really enjoyed, like, the magic systems and all of that. And I didn't really know what was going to happen. And at the ending, I was surprised. And so, like, all of that is really all that I need from a book. I need to not know what's going to happen at the end and, like, be invested in it. And
right.
I was there. So, yeah. And bonus points for being absolutely gorgeous because, you know, I have a bookshelf to maintain. Yeah,
this cover is amazing.
What about you? Yeah,
I definitely feel that. I think some of the issues I had with it definitely weighed on me a little, like, stopped me from giving it a 5.
Mm-hmm.
But a strong 4, like a very strong 4. Yeah, it's weird because I gave A Touch of Ruin 4 stars, mm-hmm. but I think it's for completely different reasons.
Right.
You know? Yeah, this was definitely a book that I literally could not put down. Like, I was so excited to pick back up.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, the author tried a lot with this book. Like, she tried Dark Academia. She tried the whole boarding school thing, even mm-hmm. though it's mentioned a number of times that this is not a boarding school.
Right.
There are no rules. And then she also tried to set up a magic system while also trying to develop 6 characters. And I feel like a lot of it didn't reach its full potential mm-hmm. by the end of the book. And yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm all for a character-driven novel. And that's really what this is. I mean, the plot is, like, paper thin. I feel like there were only a few characters that I got close with. And the other ones kind of just, like, fade it. And I don't think that was the author's intention.
Right.
You know? I love a twist ending, though. Definitely mm-hmm. a twist in this one. And yeah, a lot of setup. I'm very excited for the sequel, though. I think the sequel could be hands down a 5-star just because of what this book did.
Right. Know? Yeah. And it definitely feels like, I don't know what her plans are, but it definitely feels like this could be like a series rather than like just two, because she did set up a lot.
I think it'll definitely be at least a trilogy, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so my biggest gripe with this, though, is that the most original thing about this book is, like, the academic setting. I mean, you know, we've read magic systems before.
Mm-hmm.
We've read boarding school stuff before. We've read Dark Academia. But, like, honestly, I've never read a book that focused so exclusively on the characters, like, genuinely just learning academics.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, going somewhere genuinely to just study stuff.
Right.
And I loved that aspect of it, but we never saw that. We were just told, oh, they learned this, you know?
Right.
Like, the biggest example, this isn't really, like, a spoiler whatsoever. It happens maybe 50 pages in. But 2 characters learn to open a wormhole. And it's just, like, casually mentioned that they studied and read some books and learned how to open it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I would have just liked to see more of the academic side, you know? Because right. I do think it's the most original thing in this book.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Honestly, a really fun book. Had a really fun time. Couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Now that you mention that, I totally didn't think about it. But, like, you said, you know, there have been tons of, like, boarding school, you know, Dark Academia, you know, magical learning or whatever. But, like, at all of those places, they go to the school and then, like, they're on a quest or there's some big bad.
Right.
And they're, like, totally not, whether they're at the school anymore or not, like, they're not focused on the school. And this really right. is,
they're
like,
never there to learn, you know.
Right. Exactly. You know, they've got to, like, fight Voldemort or whatever. But this one, yeah, I definitely got, you know, it's very original. I think she kind of, I don't want to say set herself up for failure. Maybe she was doing this so that she wouldn't have to describe a bunch of schools, like, study stuff, because she makes kind of a point to say, like, oh, it's really about independent study. Like, you're going to be studying on your own. That's why you have access to the archives. And then they mention, like, oh, we had a discussion about this, this, and this. And, like, basically, there's, like, one... There's two people who will, like, give lectures. But it's not... It's technically not a school, so they're not professors, but they just have, like, discussions about stuff. But, yeah, like, we don't sit through those discussions, and we don't, like, we don't get a whole lot of that.
Right, right. And, like, honestly, a full book of just, like, lectures and stuff would have been fairly boring.
Yeah.
But just to see, like, at least one scene that's like that would have been nice, you know, to see how they're learning. I mean, she mentions that they read, but that's about it.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
I loved the beginning. So, like, in the... Well, okay. So, when you open the book, there's, like, a weird little preface that, I guess, kind of sets stuff up, but it really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But then when you get into the book, the first thing that you truly see is Atlas, who is this guy who recruits these people, goes to each one of them, and you see how he recruits them. And I just thought that was really cool. I could totally picture it in my head. That's like the perfect opening for a movie or for a show.
Yeah.
And then you...
It actually is being made into a show.
Oh, already?
Yeah,
it was picked up. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have to see how it goes, because, I mean, at this point, I think... I guess they're really not into doing movie franchises anymore. they'd rather do a show. But I think it will be tough to stretch this book out into, like, an entire season of show, you know?
They'll
have to add stuff, which makes me nervous. But anyway, that, like, opening scene is perfect for that. And then, so you switch through these six perspectives. And it does give, like, a little explainer about the, like, what the society is. So, basically, the Library of Alexandria, like, way back when, they basically say that, like, they sort of faked the burning, I guess, or whatever. So, they, like, were able to save most, if not all, of the texts and just, like, hide them away. And they decided, like, to keep them safe, only very select people should have access to them. And so that's how the society was formed.
Yeah.
And so that's, like, what they're trying to get into.
It's definitely a dense, like, three pages.
Yeah, yes.
Learning that history, it's like, ooh, okay. But luckily it's... Like, you're reminded of the whole point of the society and all that stuff very frequently. So, it's pretty easy to get through that. I agree with you. The first part of this book is, like, so intriguing with how Atlas approaches these people and invites them and all this stuff. And you kind of get introduced to each character slowly so that, you know, it's not overwhelming. When they're like, oh, here's six new people, you know.
Right. Did you ever watch or read The Magicians?
I did not.
Okay. So this did remind me of that a little bit. The book is, like, meh, but I really enjoyed the show. The show is about basically, like, a magical graduate program. And you don't... If you're born into a magical family... You know about it, but that's pretty rare. So you don't know until basically you're recruited to take this test to enter the school, and then you have to learn how to do the magic. So that's another instance where they get to school, they start studying, and almost immediately, like, they're distracted by something else. But it did remind me of that, and I kept picturing Atlas as Dean Fogg from that show. So I thought that was funny. But...
Okay. Yeah, that's very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering, like, the opening scene in this is pretty much a graduation.
Yeah.
Of Libby and Nico, like, graduating from college.
Yep.
And this is kind of their graduate program.
Yeah, exactly. So I will say Libby and Nico, So that, like you said, we meet them as they're graduating from college, and they go to a magical college. Right. And so they're like
the existence of magic is like very well known in this world.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like some underground thing like Harry Potter.
Right. So you like go to magical schools and that kind of thing. So they're like co-valedictorians.
Yeah.
And Libby gives a speech, but Nico is like giving her crap and like making her nervous before her speech, and they're like bickering, and they kind of talk about how ever since they met, they have been at each other's throats constantly, but they basically have the same magical gifts. So they like take every class together and they do everything together. And then when Atlas approaches them, he approaches them like as a set. And I thought that was interesting because it kind of develops a little bit as it goes on. But also I thought it was a little annoying for them to constantly be bickering.
Yeah. So, you know, I wish we could talk about spoilers. but yeah, it reminded me a lot of this one. I literally am blanking on the characters' names, mm-hmm. but in the Shadowhunter series, there's basically two characters just like this, mm-hmm. and they're bickering for like 10 books straight. And that's literally their only character trait. It's so annoying. So I hope them two figure it out eventually.
Right. And like I said, I feel like it does get a little bit better as it goes along. I feel like quickly they make a point of saying like their powers like complement each other.
They basically have the same gift.
Right. They have the same gifts, but they kind of each have different like they can both do the same stuff, but each of them has their like favorites, you know, that they're like better at.
Well, yeah, and their powers kind of complement each other. Uh-huh. So, like, even though they're bickering all the time, they're the most powerful when they're working together.
Right. Like, and so they can, like, they have the best, like, physical magic, like, manipulating things around them. But I guess I just didn't understand why. Like, I feel like they didn't show that they complemented each other enough. They just kind of said it. Yeah. And there was only, like, one instance in which they needed to work together.
See, that's a lot of what happened in this book.
Yeah.
A lot was told to us. We didn't see much, but there were a few instances in this book where you do see them using magic, mm-hmm. but it's very rare. And luckily there is something very early on where like all of them have to use their magic, mm-hmm. which is nice. But I would have liked more scenes like that, honestly.
Yeah.
Where, like, they were using it, because we're constantly told how powerful all six of these are, and, like, how smart they are, and how much they can do, how much potential they have, but we're never really shown it.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. I wish, because these two have definitely the most, maybe including Reyna,
mm-hmm.
but, those three definitely have the most, like, physical magic. Like, you can visually see it. So, it would have been nice to see them working it a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. So, after Libby and Nico, we meet Reyna. And her power... So, they say she's a naturalist, which she is. Like, meaning, like, mm-hmm. plants, basically. Like, natural things. But rather than her... using her power, like having to like exert herself to use her power, they basically say like she's so powerful that she has to work to not use her magic at any given time.
Yeah.
Well,
and so there's also this thing in like this magical universe that mm-hmm. as you use your magic, you become tired.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like you're using your energy, and I feel like Reyna was definitely the one to express that the most,
mm-hmm.
was that whenever she was using her magic, she was constantly like, oh, I'm tired now, mm-hmm. you know. But You know, the first thing that we do meet her, I actually really like it because she's working in this, like, cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, she's talking to these plants around her. She's, like, weaving these vines. I'm like, all
right. Right.
I like this girl.
Yeah, she's funny. And she basically says, like, she grows up, she's from Japan, and she grows up, basically everyone recognizes her power and wants to use her for, like, farming, basically, you know, like, oh my god, yeah. she could do such good things with, you know, production of produce. And so she feels like everyone wants something from her, everyone wants to use her, and so she goes to school strictly for academics. Like, she wants to study, she's interested in ancient texts, and that's how Atlas gets her. He, like, shows up at her cafe, and she's like, I don't want to because you want to use me and my power too. And he's like, well, but you can have access to all of these things that everyone thought were destroyed. And she's like, all right, fine. I guess it's worth it. And so, and she's one who we really don't, I guess we don't learn about any of their families very much, but I feel like we learn the least about her background.
Yeah. Honestly, I can't even recall much. I think she's probably, like, the majority of them, like, estranged from her family.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I think Tristan is definitely the most we get.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, for sure. We talk about his family more than the rest of them. But, yeah, they basically just say, like, you know, Raina says everyone always wanted something from me, so, like, I don't need people. Yeah. So she, like, isolates herself. And then we probably meet Tristan next.
Yeah.
And he is, like, working at some big, like, corporation. So, like, basically in the magical world, like, they have institutions all to themselves. So they have firms and lawyers and colleges and all of that, like, for magical people. So he works at one of those. Like, it's a boring corporate job, but it is, like, existing in the magical world. So anyway, he's, like, trying to work his way up there, and he's engaged to the boss's daughter, and he totally hates her and, like, doesn't care about her, but he craves, like, wealth and success, and so that's what he's doing there. And he's kind of one where he's really not, you think that he's not interested in the Alexandrian society at all, and he ends up going anyway just because, like, Atlas kind of promises him a life where he doesn't have to, like, crawl up the ladder, and he's like, all right, I guess, fine. Since I hate my fiance, I might as well check it out.
Right. And a big reason why Atlas does approach him is because he has a very rare power, which is he can see through illusions.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know, kind of pointless, you'd think, at first.
Right.
But it does come in handy.
Right.
Later on.
Yeah. And it not just, so he can see through illusions such as, like, you know, magical illusions, like if people make themselves look a different way or whatever, but he can also see through, like, lies, basically. So he says, like, his fiance is cheating on him with his, like, quote-unquote best friend, and he totally knows because, like, the illusion is that she's faithful and he can see through it, but he doesn't care because, you know, he wants to marry her to, like, inherit all of her dad's money. All
right.
At first I was kind of like, man, I don't know if I'm gonna like this guy, but I ended up not thinking he was a huge sleazebag, I guess.
You know, he became one of my favorites by the end of
really?
It.
Really?
He really grew on me after a while because, I don't know, I kind of felt bad for him after a while.
Yeah, he definitely, I think, I don't want to say wins the award, but he definitely maybe ties for the award for, like, traumatic childhood.
Yeah.
So I do feel bad for him, but
I just think that he works probably the best with all the other ones. Like, he's genuinely trying to make a connection with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everyone else is like, I'm here to study, I don't want to make alliances. And here's him.
I was going to say, like, I'm not actually here to make friends.
Right. But he's genuinely, like, reaching out to people.
Mm-hmm.
Which I appreciate it, because, like, honestly, by the end of the book, you do see that his power comes really in handy with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everyone else can kind of work independent with their power, he's, like, the one that, whenever he's paired with somebody, it's very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And then Parisa is...
Love Parisa.
Yeah, I like her a lot. I was gonna say, so we meet her and she's basically like an escort, you know?
Yeah.
And she lives in Paris, which I thought was kind of on the nose. She lives in Paris. Her name's Parisa.
Well, okay, so it is told that she changed her name.
Okay,
and yeah. I honestly think that's why she changed it to Parisa, yeah, because maybe. She moved to Paris and then made a new identity, and mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that would make sense.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But she is approached by Atlas, and she's, like, intrigued. She's a telepath, so she reads people's mind. I think they say that she might have some, like, telekinesis, but also, like, it's one of those things where everyone who has magical abilities, like, should be able to do at least the basics of other abilities. So, like, even though she's a telepath, she should be able to have, like, the basic abilities of, like, a naturalist or, like, whatever. She just, like,
wouldn't be. It's basically like, right, like, whatever they're born with is kind of their strength.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as we see in the book, they can learn to do many other things.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And also, I think she can cast illusions.
Mm-hmm.
We see that in one scene. So, I don't know. She's really good at, like, getting into people's minds. Mm-hmm. And, like, in this book, you learn that, like, you can astral project, which basically means, like, you can go into somebody's mind physically, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's really good at doing that as well.
And she talks a lot about how she's spent a lot of time, like, figuring out how to make people vulnerable, which is a huge part of the reason she's an escort, because that's how you get people to let their guard down, to, like, you know, learn about them, steal their secrets, that kind of thing.
Definitely, like, seduction is her number one power.
Yeah. And then we have Callum, who I couldn't stand from the get-go.
No, I couldn't stand him either.
Yeah, so he is basically, like the blurb said, he's just, like, a rich, pretty boy who his family has a ton of money. He's never really had to work for anything, and he is bored. So he decides to, you know, try his hand at the society just because. Yeah. And he is an empath. So it's like kind of telepathic, but like he can feel feelings. He can't read thoughts, but it's like basically reading thoughts.
Yeah. Him and Parisa had very similar powers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of difficult to like see the differences, because like Callum does something in this book that I thought only Parisa could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you probably know what scene I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, I don't really know where his powers really stand. He can like manipulate minds as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know, it his powers are very weird, you know. Yeah. One thing with this character though is Olivia Blake definitely wrote him so nobody liked him.
Yeah.
And so he's definitely the red herring in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So, just get ready to hate Callum.
Yeah.
He's the main villain.
Yeah, he sucks. And I think, you know, it's definitely on purpose. And there is kind of a reason why, like, you know, everyone's supposed to hate him. She does give him a little... I don't think it's supposed to redeem him, but, like, a little story where you're like, oh, okay, like, maybe that's part of why you're like this, but it's definitely not enough. I mean, Tristan and Parisa had kind of horrifying childhoods, and they're not as much of horrible people, so I don't feel bad for him. But
she definitely wrote each character to have, like, I don't know, a very obvious flaw.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Callum's is the worst.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, he comes from privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has that mindset that, like, he can, or he's owed a lot from people.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So, I was going to say, they talk a little bit about, like, Nico also came from a rich family, a powerful family, but he is not like that. I will say this is one of my least favorite things. So Nico has this roommate slash best friend named Gideon, and Gideon is basically a magical creature, like a hybrid between basically a mer person and something else. And so it
was a centaur.
Oh, okay.
Half mermaid, half centaur.
But he lives on land and looks like a human.
Right. I'm like, what genes? Right. Like, how did that work out? Because he was, like, human passing. Like, you would just think he's a regular human.
Right.
But, what?
Yeah, it was weird. And he, basically, Nico, so Gideon's mom is the mer person, and she is, like, a scam artist, basically. She, like, works in, like, the magical underbelly. And so she uses Gideon for her plots, and so Nico spends a lot of time and energy, like, hiding Gideon from his mom, because Gideon, like, can't resist helping her. And it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like,
well, and then Nico's main objective while at this society with these archives is to find a cure for Gideon. I was so confused. Like, what is he trying to cure?
Right. You know? So Gideon is able to, like, go into people's dreams. Like, astral project into people's dreams. And he's also, like, when he's in there, he can, like, make you have a dream. Or he can just, like, observe. So, like, that's part of the reason his mom wants him, is because that's another way to, like, collect secrets or manipulate people. But they mention that he's, like, narcoleptic. So, like, he can't, like, he falls asleep for long periods of time and can't help it. And then also Nico thinks that he might die young, I think. It was another thing again.
Maybe.
They say it and because don't show
he was
it.
Aging. So, like, he was aging like a normal human.
Uh-huh.
Or something. Although then, I think one time it's mentioned that he's, like, 80.
Right.
And he looks like 20. So, I really, like, honestly, I think she info dumped that at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Because we were meeting everyone, like, it was in, like, Libby's first chapter when we learned this, and I'm like, okay, I guess we'll talk about him later. And so I think it's very likely that we probably just missed something and it was never brought back up.
My guess is that he'll factor in the second book, because he definitely like was there and mentioned throughout. I don't know how or why, but I have a feeling that's what's gonna happen.
Yeah. I mean, we could probably find the answer on Reddit, but
yeah.
What's the fun but of that? We'll learn about it in October.
Also, this is, like, super unimportant, but Gideon is one of Nico's roommates, and the other roommate, I think his name was, like, Nick or something.
Max.
Oh, yes, Max, a dog name, because he's a shapeshifter and turns into a dog, and he basically just, like, is a Labrador Retriever person.
Right.
And I just thought that was funny. And then the only other, like, outside person that we care about is Libby's boyfriend, Ezra, who Nick hates because Nick just thinks he's, like, an oafy, like, boring dude. And he really doesn't factor that much when we meet him. He's just kind of, like, there. No. For Libby to have a reason to, like, think twice about going. But in the end, of course, she goes.
Because she has to break the news to Ezra
mm-hmm.
that she's leaving for a year.
Mm-hmm.
and can't tell him why.
Right, you know? And can't tell him anything. That's the big thing.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think that's everyone.
Yeah.
So, who was your favorite? Same.
Yeah, it was hard. So, honestly, I really liked Nico. I was surprised because at first I was like, what an annoying pest. But I really liked him. I think I unfortunately, like, related with Libby the most. I think she's supposed to be, like, you know, she's, like, the traditional heroine of these kind of books. You know, like,
yeah, nervous. She was, like, the most YA in this book. For like, she was the I'm not like other girls.
Yes, exactly.
Girl in this book.
Yes, very, like, nervous and fidgety and questioning herself, like, super not confident. But, yeah. Like, you know, she's got these huge powers, but she is very confident with her magic, and she knows that she's really good, and she's very smart. But she was born into, like, a muggle family, like a non-magical magical family. You know, they're not rich, and so she feels like she has to prove herself. And it's sad because everyone talks about how annoying they should think she is for, like, the whole book. To the point where it's,
I mean,
obnoxious.
She is also, she is kind of obnoxious.
She is, yes.
But I think her main flaw is that she's, like, desperate. Mm-hmm. She's really, really desperate for people to like her.
Uh-huh.
And, like, especially Nico.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're always butting heads, but she's always like, we gotta work together. And Nico's like, no, we don't. You know?
Right. And, yeah, she, like, she wants to be, like, girlfriends with Raina, and she's like, uh-uh. And she's just used to, like, people-pleasing, and, you know, that's hard for her. So, yeah, it's kind of, like, honestly, it kind of plays out like if a YA heroine were with real people. Like, they're all just kind of like, can you take a freaking chill pill and, like, back off? And what, something happens, like, very quickly when they all meet. Callum says something super rude, and after that, him and Libby, he gets super annoyed that Libby keeps asking questions, because, you know, they're brought to this society with little to no information, and so she's asking questions, and Callum decides that it's super annoying, and so he uses his influence to make her be quiet. And Nico goes, Libby is never this quiet. What's happening? And then they all, like, realize what he did, and Libby is so mad. And then everyone's mad at Callum. Like, it's rude to use your influence on other people. And so that creates, like, a feud where they hate each other.
Right. But, like, I get it. Yeah. I don't know. I liked Libby at the start, but she definitely got on my nerves.
Yeah.
As the book went on, because I was like, okay, you're a little too desperate for me to attach to.
Mm-hmm.
I would say mine is a tie between Parisa and Tristan.
Yeah.
I liked their dynamic, and, like, Parisa, I think, honestly, she had the most interesting scenes in this entire book. So, and Tristan, like I said, he grew on me because, I don't know, he wasn't like Libby where he was like, let's be friends, like, let's, work together. He was more like, okay, are we gonna work together for this, like, logical problem,
right?
You know?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I did like Parisa, but she was very, like, cold, you know. She just has that, like, that, like, overconfident, like, sassy personality that I was just kind of like, ugh, sometimes.
Yeah,
but I mean, she is really good, you know. She's good at what she does, and, like, she she knows it, but it was just,
well,
like,
and something happens at, like, the beginning of the book, or not the beginning, like, probably the, you're about a third of the way through the book. And she's, like, devastated over it. And, like, honestly, that gave me that she at least has a little bit of a moral compass.
Yeah.
Unlike someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that definitely made her grow on me because, you know, she'll do her seduction things, but at the end of the day, like, she at least cares a little bit about people.
Yeah.
You know?
I definitely liked her way more at the end than I did when we met her.
Yeah.
We forgot in our, like, little introductions, but this relates to Parisa the most. So we have Atlas, who recruited everybody. He's the caretaker. And then there's Dalton, who is he's part of the society. Like, he's been through the whole thing. He's been initiated, but instead of, like, going out into the world, he decided to stay to continue to research. And so he's sort of like the TA. Like, he does.
Yeah.
He, like, leads discussions and he answers some questions. He's kind of, like, quiet and, you know, you're kind of like, what's up, dude? And Parisa immediately is like, oh, I can get some goods out of him. Well,
yeah. I mean, Dalton's whole point of being in the book is to tell them stuff about the society. He is the one that leaks the information. He doesn't really have, like, much of a, like, character beyond that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And he totally is enthralled by Parisa. It does not take her long. Like, you know, he's not really her teacher and there's not really rules. So, you know, it's not like a expressed no-no that they be together. But at the same time, they both very weakly acknowledge that it's a power dynamic and it's kind of weird, but they're like, eh, it's fine. Yeah. And so they're like,
remember, it's not a boarding school.
Right, it's not a school. They're all adults. Yeah. But yeah, they're totally sleeping together the whole book. And then, so, Tristan, he is just kind of doing his best because he's definitely the least, like, he doesn't have as much practice as everybody else because his gift is just, like, seeing through illusions.
Oh, right.
And he's not as good. You know, he's not very good with, like, the physical magic and that kind of thing. And I was going to mention his dad.
Yeah.
So they mention a few times that his dad is, like, a fairly competent, they call them witches? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's also, like, a crime lord, like, mafia. And so Tristan has spent his whole life trying to distance himself from his father. His father was really rude to him and, you know, criticized his gift or what he perceived as a lack thereof when he was growing up. And so a lot of what Tristan does is to kind of throw it in his father's face, be like an upright, successful kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so he's just kind of like keeping his head down and like being there the best that he can.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like that's mentioned when we meet him, honestly.
Yeah. And I would bet some money that we're going to meet his father in the second book.
Oh, definitely.
For sure.
We're going to definitely meet some parents in the second book. We're going to get to know them a little bit more.
Uh-huh. Yep. And Callum doesn't talk about his family. He's just like standing around being rude. And he, like, gloms on to Tristan because he thinks that he's, like, the most vulnerable to manipulation, basically. Because he doesn't know how to defend himself.
I mean, honestly, he's not wrong.
Right. He's not. Doesn't make it cool, though. So, yeah, that's basically the setup of what we're looking at as far as pre-spoilers.
I mean, you know, this book is very similar to Night Bitch in terms of there's not much to spoil in it because it's a lot about them figuring out what else they can do with their magic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is one big factor that we haven't mentioned, but I feel like that's a bit of a spoiler because it happens fairly into the book. But other than that and, like, the twist ending, if you can call it that, there's really not much to spoil.
Right.
It's more or less just you getting to know these characters, whether you like them or not.
Right. Yeah. You're just kind of getting to know them, and they're doing their studying, and
you know one of them will die by the end of the book.
Mm-hmm. And that's that. That's it. So they, it's funny because they don't know at first, you know.
Right.
You find out later that, you know, some, they're not going to just, like, send someone home. Like, they are going to kill them. But, like, and everyone's, yeah, like, super shocked and opposed. And I was kind of like, I get it, but this is a magical society that's secret, I mean, to everyone. So like,
whenever it was, like, mentioned that they don't know, because I thought it was fairly obvious, I went back to the chapter where Atlas is telling them about the boarding school, or whatever this is. I don't know. And he says one of them will be eliminated. And I'm like, did y'all think this was, like, American Idol?
Right.
Where you you just learned all this magic and now you're just going home? Like, right. No.
That's not how this works.
Right.
Yeah, so.
But it's a very good book.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend.
Yes, very good.
Even if you're, like, I'm not a big fantasy reader, like, at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I would recommend this.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the author could have done things a little bit differently, but overall, I think she did a very good job.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very excited for the sequel. So, if you want to read it and you haven't yet, you should go away.
Yes,
because the spoilers are the fun part.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the three things that happened in this book.
Okay.
So I guess the first big spoiler is the forum, that there's an opposing society who thinks that all this intelligence shouldn't be held.
Right.
Like, basically in captivity, and it should be readily available.
Mm-hmm.
And so, basically, the forum, about maybe a fourth of the way through this book, you don't know that it's the forum. You just think someone's breaking into the archive.
Mm-hmm.
But they break in, and the six main characters have to fight them off. And this is, like, the first big use of their powers.
Right. And they...
And basically...
I was going to say, they say, like, after the fact, Atlas says, like, oh, it wasn't a test. It was just...
Right.
You know,
like,
we just...
they knew it was going to happen.
Right, they're like, we didn't hire anybody, we just, you know, let everyone know that the wards are gonna be weak that day, and, you know, if they were gonna try something, that would be the time.
Right, they were basically like, so, we're gonna tell everyone that six people that really don't know each other, and that are kinda new to using their magic, like, together are gonna be protecting the wards, and, like, if they want to break into the archives and steal some stuff, like, do it now.
Right. Exactly. And so yeah, so they tell them like, as soon as they get there, Atlas says, like, okay, like, you guys, for your first, like, act as this initiation class, need to figure out some wards to protect this place. And everyone's kind of like, well, like, what do you mean? Like, what,
like,
are you protecting?
How do we do that?
From who? Don't you already have wards? And Atlas is like, okay, bye. Right. And so they're all kind of, like, trying to figure it out, and they're bickering, and they go to sleep, and then a bunch of people attack, and they're like, oh, okay, this is why.
See, I thought this was definitely one of the most interesting scenes, and probably the best scene, which is sad because it happened so early on.
Yeah.
But in terms of their magic, because essentially what they did is broke into twos.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Nico and Reyna teamed up, basically using physical magic to just, like, kill a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Libby and Tristan teamed up. And honestly, this was, like, one of my favorite scenes in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, Libby saw an illusion, but Tristan could see through that illusion, so he was, like, basically using Libby as a gun.
Yeah.
And, like, shooting at people. And was like, okay, that's not a real person, but this is, let's, like, you know, kill them.
Right.
And then you actually don't see Parisa and Callum go off, but you later learn that Callum used this magic to make somebody kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part where I was like, okay, I feel for Parisa.
Yeah.
Because she has been, like, just drenched in guilt over allowing Callum to do it because she could have, like, fought against that, you know?
Yeah, she, like, it really catches her off guard, and they allude several times that she's, like, uncomfortable around Callum. She doesn't trust him. And so you're, like, trying to figure out why, and then, you know, you finally know. And he, not only did he do this, he very much does not feel like it's a big deal. He's like, everyone else killed people too. Like, I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
And Parisa is just like, yikes.
I don't like this man.
Yeah. I mean, same. But,
yeah. I mean, but later on they have a standoff.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, I mean, I would say Callum won. Parisa says Callum won, but I didn't lose. Because Callum essentially takes over Parisa's mind and makes her spit out all this awful trauma about her childhood, where, was it her brother's friend, like, assaulted her?
And took her as a child bride.
Right. Yeah. And then basically led Parisa to suicide. And, like, would have killed her, but Parisa kind of took over the whole situation and made it happen in Nico's mind, so she didn't actually die. Honestly, I think Callum is probably stronger than Parisa. But Parisa's, a lot of the times, especially after what he did during that initiation battle or whatever, she's always, like, one step ahead.
Right.
Because she knows Callum's gonna do something messed up, you know?
Yeah, I think she, I think he may be stronger, but she's trickier.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, I thought that scene was pretty cool as well.
I really enjoyed that scene.
As I was reading it, I was like, oh my god. Oh my god. And I was truly like, okay, like, is she, are they really gonna let this happen? Like, one, is the author really gonna kill someone off right now? Two, like, all of the other initiates are just watching it happen.
Right.
And I was, like, kind of shocked by that. But then also, you know, they already said one of them's gonna die. Like, this would be convenient. But, like, damn, I really didn't want it to be Parisa. And, yeah, you're just, like, going through all of this. And then you find out that, yeah, she projected it into Nico's mind. But, like, everyone could see it.
Yeah.
And
but then Nico, like, literally felt so, like, oh my god, how did that happen? Yeah. Like, how did I allow that to happen?
Right.
And Parisa's like, it's okay, it's just my power.
Right. Yeah, but, like, the situation basically actually did happen, so everyone would have watched it happen, basically. And also, they used Dalton as a, what do they call him? Like, a referee. And they're like, all you're here to do is to tell us to stop at the end of our 10 minutes or however long they say they're doing, right? And so when it happens, everyone looks at Dalton and they're like, why didn't you do anything? And he's like, it wasn't, time wasn't up yet.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, what?
We were on, like, minute seven.
So, yeah, she didn't actually die. I was worried. I, like, for a minute, I had that, like, sense of dread. Like, oh, my God, Callum is gonna, like, get into this society and, like, be supervillain status.
Well, and I was like, she's not able to fight back at all. Like, Callum had, like, a death grip on her.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my God, Parisa, use your magic. And, like, she could not.
Right.
At all.
Terrifying.
I was worried for her. I was very worried for her.
Yeah. But she very strategically did it on purpose. And, like, they don't really say if she let it happen. Like, I don't think she did. Yeah. I think she very much, like, put herself in that situation and then did her best, knowing that, knowing that she was safe still. But she needed to show everyone, like, what he absolutely would do.
Yeah. Well, also, they mentioned that, you know, using the magic exhausts them.
Right.
And I think maybe because she was already using the astral projection,
she
probably was not able to do much else. Because she was, like, projecting everyone into Nico's mind, which I would think uses quite a bit of magic.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, so Callum made this illusionist kill herself. Parisa feels bad. And that's when they all learn about the forum. And it's basically this group of people, you know, like we said, that want to expose the society and free all this information. And over Christmas break, each of them get individually approached by somebody in the forum. Mm-hmm. And I guess they kind of extend an invitation to them to join them. Obviously, all of them say no, because they end up back in the society. What else happened?
So with Dalton and Parisa, I don't 100% know that I know exactly what they were getting at. I think I do. But basically, Parisa and Dalton are sleeping together and, you know, they really like each other, but Parisa is using him and reading his mind.
Yeah.
And for some reason, she decides that she wants to, like, go inside his head. And she notices that he has, like, extremely strong, like, mental wards, and he's, like, very weird about them. And so he agrees to let her in, and he says, you know, I'm basically gonna, like, make it hard for you, but if you can break through my defenses, then, you know, you'll find out a secret. And so she goes, okay. And so she, like, projects into his mind, and she finds this, like, weird, like, castle. She has to, like, wind her way up through the castle and make her way through, and then she picks a door, and she finds, like, a Dalton.
Young Dalton.
Yeah, young Dalton, but he's, like, very erratic and acting strange and, like, not being, like, Dalton, like, the Dalton that she knows. And he's, like, kind of saying weird stuff and speaking in riddles, and she's very confused. And when she comes back, Dalton's like, where were you? Like, you didn't even get to what I had laid out for you. And she was like, what? And he's like, I, like, made a safe with a combination. And so there's, like, a recess of his mind that he's, like, not even aware of. And so you're kind of, like...
They, like, mention that there's, like, a being in there.
Yeah. You're kind of, like, what does this mean? And they touch on it, like, one other time. But so when she's in his mind, she doesn't get herself out. She's pulled out by Atlas.
Right.
So that's where you find
As
out that
if
Atlas
there's
is...
something she's not supposed to see.
Right. And also Atlas is, like, patrolling Dalton's mind.
Yeah. Well, and isn't that... I'm pretty sure that's when she learns that somebody has to be killed.
Yeah, she learns it from Dalton for sure. But I was going to say...
she kind of spreads it around.
Yeah, exactly. And then she tells one
person...
Also,
poor Libby, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She was, like, the last one to learn it. And she's like, who knows this? And they're like, everyone.
Everyone. And she's like, what? Callum, like, tries to convince everyone to just kill Libby. And I'm like, you suck.
Right. and then you're like, everyone wants to kill you.
Exactly. also, I was going to say, pretty early on in the book, when Atlas is introducing Dalton, Atlas mentions, you know, he's talking about the archives. The way that it works is that you, like, go to, like, one of those tubes in a bank, and you, like, request a book, and the house, the archives, whatever, decides whether they're going to give it to you or not. So the initiates have restricted access. Like, the books they can get are only those that relate to what they're talking about at the time. But Atlas mentions that even when you're in the society, you have restricted access, like, based on what you need. Or, you know, you basically have to have clearance to see certain books. And he says that Dalton has access to books that Atlas can't even see.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of one of those, put a pin in that. We'll come back to that later.
Okay. So, should we talk about the ending now?
Yeah.
About Mr. Ezra.
Ezra. So, I will say, I had a suspicion that he was at least involved. Because
I did not.
There's a scene with Tristan where he So Tristan discovers that not only can he see through illusions, but he can, if he focuses, he can see magic and he can see time, basically. So, like, him and Libby are experimenting with, like, time magic and that kind of thing. So Tristan is outside and, you know, the house that they're in is, like, hidden and there's lots of wards and stuff. And he goes out to the edge of the wards and he's kind of like experimenting, like looking through them. And all of a sudden he turns and there's just like a man there. And he's like, hey. And the guy's like, hey. And the guy's basically like, I'm at my apartment. Like, where are you? And Tristan's like, not your apartment. And the guy's like, okay. But it's Ezra.
And so with that scene, that's whenever I started to get a little suspicious. Mm-hmm. But before that, I thought Ezra was just the annoying boyfriend.
Oh, no, totally same. It wasn't until that scene that I thought that he was involved at all. So he basically keeps calling Libby and he's pissed off that Libby can't tell him anything. So she breaks up with him and like, that's done.
Yeah.
I was like, good for you. But then when that scene happened, I was like, something's up. He's involved. So, basically, it's so confusing. Like, I feel like it's just better to read it, honestly. I'm not going to lie. But the long and the short of it is that Ezra's gift is that he can time travel.
Right.
And he misses, like, a lot of his childhood because... So, he is Jewish. And when he was a kid, his synagogue was attacked and he saw his mother die. And so it's like super traumatic. And so he like skips through time, basically not living life for a while.
Well, he tries to reverse time.
Right.
So that his mother doesn't die, but it's something about fate and something. So every time he tried that, she just kept dying.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, I can't change anything. So he finally decides to settle and he goes to college. And then he's invited to the society in, like, the 70s, I think they said, or the 80s. And so he is in the same initiation class with Atlas. And him and Atlas are, like, big dreamers. Like, you know, this society is corrupt and we could do so much better, blah, blah, blah. So they come up with this plan where they have to get the perfect initiation class. And then they'll be able to use their powers to change the world, to make it better, is what they say.
Basically take over the world.
Yeah.
World domination.
But for everyone's good. And so,
right.
Basically, Ezra time travels through, like, to different meeting points with Atlas. So, from one meeting point, he goes directly to the next. But then Atlas has been living for, like, 10 years, and he checks in. And so, you know, he gathers the class, and then Ezra kind of realizes that Atlas is going off the rails and not...
Yeah, because he's getting old, and,
you know,
Ezra is still, like, 21.
Right, he's jealous that he's aging, he thinks he knows better, and so part of the plan was that Ezra get close to one of them, so he purposely gets close to Libby, but he finds himself actually in love with her, and then at the end he decides that he needs to stop Atlas from doing what he's gonna do. So he takes Libby.
He takes Libby to a different time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if it's ever mentioned what time she's in.
Mm-mm.
But then he also goes to visit, it's not necessarily specified, but my hunch is it's his class from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But he goes to visit, like, five other, they're called mediums, the magicians, basically. And he's like, okay, he's got a really powerful class right now, and we need to stop them.
Right.
And that's where the book ends.
Right. And they mention, so in one of the meetings that Ezra has with Atlas, they mention that Callum was the one who was, like, supposed to die because everyone has to die. And so they had to make sure they picked one to die. And so that is why Callum's such a piece of shit. It's because they wanted everyone to hate him.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm thinking the next book is, like, going to definitely pick up maybe with an attack on the archives by these five or six individuals now. And Libby's just going to be who knows where.
Right. I don't know. I feel like... Oh, you know what? Oh, I remember. So when he meets with the people, I assumed it was the forum that he met with.
Well, okay, so it's mentioned that he's in a room with six powerful people. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was like, okay, if he's counting himself, it's like...
Yeah.
Maybe he went back in time to visit, you know, the his class of initiates. His class,
yeah. Yeah, they don't say it, so I guess we'll see. But I was going to say, I feel like the next book we'll see like a resistance uprising type situation.
Yeah. Hunger Games.
Right. But also... Tristan and Nico and everyone basically vow that they're gonna find Libby. So, like, they're definitely gonna be looking for her.
Right. Okay, so we didn't touch on it, but there's one scene in particular that I was like, what is going on? And that's when Gideon's mom tries to seduce Nico.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, Gideon's, like, Nico's best friend.
Right.
And you're his mom. This is so weird. Like, I don't know how I feel about this right now.
Right, it was weird. But she's like, you know, an ageless mermaid. And it's... Right. She's not very motherly.
Well, the thing is also, she's trying to get something out of Nico. She's trying to figure out... It's either she can't find Gideon or she just can't get in contact with him. And so she's trying to get that out of Nico. And I'm like, maybe your best option isn't to try to seduce him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that was very weird. That scene was very weird.
Also, Tristan, he sleeps with Parisa, but then also sleeps with Libby, and, like, instantly falls in love with Libby. Not a big fan of insta-love like that.
Right, no, it was weird. You know? And he seems very begrudging about it. He's like,
yeah.
He's like, why do I love Libby?
Because Callum is constantly like, okay, so let's kill Libby. Mm-hmm. And Tristan's like, no, we can't. Like, let's kill Parisa or something.
Right. Somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do hope that we see more of Reyna in the next book because I think she definitely has a lot of potential with her powers and we did not see a lot of it.
Yes. Here. She's very, like, quiet and grumpy. She's just kind of, like, skulking around reading in corners.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And another thing that I loved about Libby's character, just because it made her seem so, I don't know, so YA, is that anytime she was talking to somebody and Callum came up to them, she would just, like, scurry away.
Yeah.
And I think Callum once mentioned that she was, like, a cat. Just, like, runs away whenever, like, anyone comes up to her.
Yeah.
Definitely a good time.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it a lot. I'm very excited for the sequel to come out. Highly recommend.
Highly, highly recommend. I also, like, this is not a format that I see a lot, but this book has, like, 8 parts.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, you know, definitely weird for a book, but I think it worked really well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're just named, like, they're called, like, truth and space and time and thought. But, like, genuinely, like, the little amount of plot that happens in these parts actually has to do with that.
Right.
And I do like that. She wasn't just, like, pulling something out of her ass, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I did like that. And the names are, like, simple. And there are also some, like, illustrations in the book, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Those are nice to look at.
Although, that was very, like, fanfic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, okay, artwork.
Yeah. So, what are we reading next?
Right. Okay, I don't know. I'm gonna, like, shoot in the dark for the author's name, but the book is, like, over on my desk.
Okay.
But we are reading The Love Hypothesis by Ali Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Okay.
It may not be that. For some reason I think Hazel is somewhere in her name, so
that's
could
me.
Be something like that. But I'm sure you've heard of it. It's the traditionally published Star Wars fan fiction.
What a sentence that is.
Right. Neither Lily or I have seen the new Star Wars movies. Mm-mm. So, as for the accuracy, who knows?
Who knows?
It
is Allie Hazelwood.
Okay, I almost got it. Almost got it. But, very excited for it. I have mm-hmm. not started it. I may start it today.
Nice. Yeah, I still have to go get it, but I will be starting it soon. It seems like it would definitely be a quick read.
I think it is. I was looking up reviews for it. Like, this book has a weirdly high Goodreads rating.
Uh-huh. So, I don't think I was going to say, I don't think it is actually Star Wars fanfic. I think it started that way. Like, kind of a 50 Shades kind of thing, and then it, like,
just, like,
morphed into something else. Yeah.
Okay. I know the two main characters are based on that, so we'll see.
Yes.
I think it's going to be an enemies to lovers, given Kylo Ren is the villain.
Right.
And Rey is the Jedi, I think. Uh-huh. If that's the appropriate term for her. But yeah. I've seen a lot of reviews saying it's like, you can read it in one sitting, which I know will not happen for me because I'm a slow reader. But that's at least motivating, mm-hmm. you know. I've just been in such a romance kick lately, so maybe that's why Parisa was, like, one of my favorite characters in this.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I think it'll be, you know, I don't think it's going to be such a long discussion, but who knows? A Touch of Darkness lasted about this amount of time.
Yeah, who knows? We always say, oh, it's not going to take that long, and we lie.
Yeah.
That's okay. Are you reading anything else right now?
Not currently, but between A Touch of Ruin and this, I read a spectacular book.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Mary Jane by Jessica something something. She has three names.
Okay.
In her name. Maybe Anya is one of them. I don't know. One of my favorites this year that I've read so
nice.
Far. It was so good. It's about a 14-year-old nanny who goes to nanny for the psychiatrist and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's set in the 70s, so everything is so simple, no technology, no anything. And basically, they have to keep this under wraps, but a rock star and his, like, musician wife mm-hmm. are coming to stay with the family over the summer because the rock star has been dealing with addiction and kind of needs that, like, 24/7 care.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's an amazing coming-of-age novel. Like, seriously, all the characters feel so real.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a great summer read. It reminded me of the vibes of Malibu Rising, okay. honestly. Like, you're outside, you're, like, in nature, but, like, you're with, like, really positive people. It's just, it's a really fun time. There's some drama.
Sure.
Love some drama.
Of course.
But I usually hate reading about teenagers, especially young teenagers.
Yeah.
And absolutely love the main character in this. And her name is Mary Jane. So, you know, the rock star obviously smokes weed because it's the 70s.
Right.
And so they do make that joke in the book. But yeah, it was just an amazing, like, feel-good book. If you just need something, like, a quick read, definitely recommend it.
Nice.
What about you?
I have been reading a series. I bought the first book from like a used bookstore, and then I ordered the rest of them. So the first book is called The Queen of the Tierling. So it's a fantasy series, and it's set in like basically post-apocalyptic times. So like 400 years from now, basically like the known world devolved into a mess, and it was really bad. And so this man named William Tyr like gathered like a very small group of people, like just a couple thousand, and took them to like start a new society. And you know, it was supposed to be a utopia, but on the way people were like trying to get them to stop, like they didn't want them to leave. And so a couple of the ships went down, including the ship with all of like the doctors. And so they go and they don't have modern medicine, and basically it's like a primitive, you know, where you're at is like a medieval times type setting. Like they know that this stuff used to exist, but they don't have the technology or the ability to do it. And also like they have very few books. Like they have some recovered, you know, that were brought over, but not a lot. And they don't have a way to write books. So it's like, that's a whole thing, right? And so this kingdom, the Tierling, the queen had a baby and sent her away to be fostered. And then the queen died. And so her brother took over, the regent, until the baby, who's now queen, could take over. So he was a terrible leader, absolutely debaucherous, you know, typical kind of stuff. And he doesn't want to lose the crown, and so he's trying to find this girl and kill her whole childhood. But he doesn't. She grows up, she comes of age, she is making it back to her kingdom, and she kind of comes back to a mess that this 19-year-old girl now has to try to fix.
Oh.
So, yeah. Very interesting concept. Lots of...
It's YA?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe it's... I feel like sometimes there's, like, YA that's, like, YA. And then sometimes it's kind of between YA and new adult.
Yeah. I've heard that, like, about, like, Sarah J. Maas. Like,
Yeah. Explicit, gruesome, but... Sounds very YA for sure. Okay. But yeah, it was pretty good. And so I read the second book, and I need to read the third book. And then there's like a prequel that I got as well.
Oh.
So yeah.
So it's a full series.
Yeah.
She just kept going.
Well, yeah. So the last book came out like 2016, and then she just published the prequel last year. So.
Gotcha. That's interesting. Gotcha. Yeah, I feel like I've seen the cover for that book, but... I haven't really seen many people talk about it.
Yeah, I hadn't. It came out like 2013. I hadn't ever heard anybody talk about it. That's all I got.
There we go.
Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you back in a few weeks.
Yeah, with hopefully another great book.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ooh, let's make it a streak.
Right.